Good day, and welcome to Detroit Today on 1019 WDET. I'm your host, Stephen Henderson, and as always, I'm really glad you've decided to join us today. I need to start today's show with a confession, and I'll be honest, it's not an easy one to make. But here goes. For at least the last 40 years, I have struggled in really deep and profound ways with mental health. I've been in treatment for much of that time, but also have spent long stretches without any aid at all, trying to make sense of it all on my own. I've reached really, really dark lows that required sudden interventions. I've had to peel away from the duties of school when I was younger, work when I was older, and even parenting at times because of these struggles. They are disruptors, and often frightening ones for me and sometimes for the people around me. After 40 years, I know this is just part of who I am, an important part. And if there's one thing I've really learned over these four decades, it's that the most crucial part of my mental health struggles is recognition. And in some ways, it's the hardest. The truth is that my mental health struggles have serious and complicated roots. Traumatic things that happened in the earliest stages of my life that have led to a confusing jumble of thoughts and emotions and impulses. And it's that jumble I wrestle with all the time, trying to straighten out the crooks and the bends in what should be part of a straightforward, more sane consciousness, but is instead a really wicked deterrent to what most of us would describe as normal life. But knowing that, acknowledging it, even embracing it, those are the things that have led me to the place where I can actually address these struggles, think about them, talk about them, work to get to a more balanced existence. And here's the other thing. I know I'm not alone, not even close. For many, many reasons, lots of us are feeling bad these days, and many of us are saying that this is because of mental health concerns. 41% of people say they have anxiety in 2019. 40% more people say they had anxiety in 2019 than had it in 1990. The U.S. Surgeon General's report says there's an epidemic of loneliness, as only 39% of adults say they feel connected to other people. Deaths have followed these sentiments, as suicide rates have increased about 36% between 2000 and 2021, according to the Centers for Disease Control. And there are lots of reasons that people point to for this. Maybe it's social media. Maybe it's our times with the pandemic and the isolation that we all suffered then. Others blame family dynamics and the way that politics have separated us from one another. As I've said, it's really hard to come up with a reason for these things, but it's recognition that matters. And if you think about it, it's almost impossible to know sometimes just how much somebody may be struggling. Think about me. You listen to this show. Many of you in the audience know me in other walks of my life. If I didn't tell you that I was someone who struggles with mental health, would you know it? May is Mental Health Awareness Month, and to honor that and to better understand the mental health challenges that people are enduring, the Death, Sex, and Money podcast out of WNYC in New York is doing something a little different. Hosted by Anna Sale, the podcast is producing a series of national call-in shows about mental health from 8 to 10 p.m. on the first three Thursdays of May. The folks who run the Death, Sex, and Money podcast believe we're at a crisis point with our mental health, and they think our institutions are really unprepared to handle this expansive and weighty problem. That's where we begin the conversation today, talking about our mental health challenges now, how they've changed over time, why this topic has become so much more prominent over the last 10 years, and how people are trying to navigate it. I'm really pleased to welcome Anna Sale back to Detroit Today. Anna, it's great to have you with us.
Oh, Stephen, thank you for having me back. I love being on this show.
Yes, it's great to have you here. So talk about this idea that you have at Death, Sex, and Money, having a national call-in show to have people talk about mental health.
Well, I think you just really modeled what we're trying to do right there by beginning this conversation in the way that you did. You know, like, if you listen to the news, if you read headlines, you know that mental health policy, the overall stats for how we're doing with our mental health in America, they are not in a good place. And what we wanted to do by having these call-ins was to have a series of conversations where we really swap stories among us about how this is unfolding in each of our lives, in our families' lives, the advice we have to share from navigating the labyrinth of the mental health care system, the questions we have, and also kind of like what you just said, that word jumble. Like, I think there's a lot of questions that each of us are walking around with of what of what I'm experiencing is a normal part of life, of taking in negative emotions and figuring out how to deal with them, and what is a diagnosable, treatable condition? And often, you know, it's both and often it's not clear what the correct intervention is. So we really wanted to sort of gather together because we do believe we are in a mental health crisis in America. And we also believe that there's not only one kind of response that's going to help us out of this. Like, it's going to take not just figuring out and better equipping each of us to navigate through the mental health care system and making sure our healthcare system is more designed to help families make one phone call to get the right kind of care, but also how do we sort of reinforce and strengthen the social connections outside of the healthcare system to help each of us thrive a little better.
Yeah. You talk about this being more than just one kind of issue. It's a social issue. It is a medical issue. It is a cultural issue in some ways. It seems like when you start kind of peeling back the layers or pulling it apart, you find that this reaches into every part of people's lives. And again, what I said about the recognition that's necessary to be able to do that, we don't have it. We don't have it about other people, but we also don't always have it about ourselves.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that recognition of just being able to say, I'm struggling and I need some additional help. I need some outside help. Like, that's a really important recognition. But it's just the start. You know, I think often when someone is just beginning to, whether it's seeking therapy or seeking going to their primary care doctor and thinking about medication for the first time, you know, that is just the beginning of an ongoing, continuous management project. So just the recognition that you're struggling, and or maybe you find a name for something that feels like an ongoing underlying condition that's a part of your makeup, you have to figure out still how to live with that makeup. There aren't very You know, often in America, we talk about hacks and cures and what's the intervention that's going to fix this thing. And as anyone who has struggled with mental illness knows, or just, you know, struggled with suffering that comes from not feeling like they're as mentally healthy as they want to, it's not something that you can flip a switch and fix.
Yeah. So on your podcast, Death, Sex, and Money, you really lean into these kinds of conversations. And I wonder what your observations are about how they're changing in terms of what people may be dealing with, but also how they're changing in terms of how people decide to deal with these things. It seems like there's kind of a two-track transition, I guess, that we're experiencing right now.
Yeah, I mean, I think this conversation is evidence of there is, and has been a growing willingness culturally for people to name when they are struggling with their mental health, and I think that is healthy. Alongside that, you know, you only have to open up TikTok and see that, there's a lot of conversation of like, maybe I have this, or maybe I have this, or I have this because I have this happening to me. And I think I often kind of picture like a podcast listener who also opens up TikTok or goes to WebMD thinking, huh, do I have this thing? Is this a name? Is this a label that feels right for myself? And that's kind of like a process that is both like taking in outside external information, but then just kind of being alone and processing it. So I think what we wanted to do with this call-in was to gather up calls. And I'm also going to be joined by experts who are trained mental health professionals. I'm a journalist. I'm not a trained mental health professional. Just to help people unpack all that's coming at them in terms of how they think of their own mental health. Mm-hmm. What does it mean? Is this something that is a result of some factor in my life that is temporary? Is it something that is changing about my body because of my age and how my hormones are changing? Is this something that, is hereditary in my family, and I'm the first member of my family to admit that I think we have a tendency towards depression? Like, all of these things are part of figuring out how to take care of your mental health. And so we wanted to create just some space to talk together where it wasn't so much kind of picturing people just kind of on their own taking in all these messages. Mm-hmm. We wanted to have a little bit more conversation back and forth.
Yeah. Okay, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to continue this conversation with Anna Sale, who's the host of the Death, Sex, and Money podcast on WNYC. We'll continue talking about Mental Health Awareness Month here in May and the three national call-in shows that Death, Sex, and Money will host during May. We also want to get going with you, our listeners, on the phones and on social. Call and tell us whether mental health is something that you have struggled with. Why do you think it has become such a big topic in the last 5 years? What kind of help do you think people need to help with their mental health issues? Also give us a sense of, if you're someone who struggles with mental health, how you find relief, how easily you're able to find relief. Are there challenges and barriers that stand in your way? 313-577-1019 is always the number here on the phones. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter and hashtag Detroit Today, and we can include you in our program that way. We'll be right back with more Detroit Today. This is Detroit Today on 101.9 WDET. I'm Stephen Henderson, and I'm really glad you've joined us today. Our guest is Anna Sale. She is the host of the Death, Sex, and Money award-winning podcast on WNYC. She is hosting three live national call-in shows about mental health the first three Thursdays of May from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. It is Mental Health Awareness Month, May is, and we're talking about the need to talk about mental health, the need to be honest about mental health and the struggles that many of us endure and experience, and what we need to do to get people to be more eager to recognize mental health and mental health struggles, but also to get help when they need it. 313-577-1019 is the number here on the phones. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter and hashtag Detroit Today, and we can work you into the program that way. Let's start today with Bernadette in Old Redford. Bernadette, go ahead.
Good morning. I think that you cannot be a citizen of this country and not go crazy because the pandemic, where we are wondering if, at least I was wondering if, I was just looking out my picture window and wondering if the hearse was coming for me. People that I knew or knew of were dying. Old movie stars, they're dying. And it was just depressing, not debilitating, but depressing. And some anti-anxiety medications that I've tried, low doses, seem to give me night terrors. Mm. So, you know, I just kind of like to cool out my nerves.
Bernadette, I love that you call, and I love how frank you are about what you're dealing with. Anna, I hear echoes in what Bernadette is saying of things I hear from lots of people these days about these kind of struggles.
Yeah, you know, one of the things we did ahead of this call-in is we asked therapists who listen to our podcast to be our reporters and to call in and leave us messages about what they're noticing, about what they're hearing at work. And they echoed Bernadette. A lot of just the pandemic left so many of us just ragged and alone feeling and overwhelmed and kind of this sense that we're all sort of piece by piece trying to crawl our way back. And of course, we'll never be the same having gone through it, especially those who experienced profound loss through the pandemic. But then again, as what Bernadette just said, like, you know, so then what? So then do you try anti-anxiety medication? See if that helps. You know, it's always just kind of, that's what I think is so challenging about managing our mental health, is that just begins a conversation, maybe not just with a counselor or a therapist, but with your doctor, maybe with, you know, members of your community, members of your church, people who are at your school. You know, how do I build back an ecosystem to help me sort of get through the challenges that life throws at us, and that's for someone who doesn't have a profound serious mental illness. You know, that is on top. You know, that presents a whole other list of challenges of how to manage that. But Bernadette, I think that a lot of people feel the way you do. Thanks for calling in.
Yeah. On Twitter, we've got a couple comments. Dan says, I'm right there with you in my own challenges with mental health, encouraged by general raised awareness of this condition, concerned that higher awareness gets distorted by knee-jerk reactions of politicians and media to mass shootings as caused by mental health problems. That's an interesting observation. Boomy on Twitter says, I think part of what is adding to the mental health issues in America since the 90s is, and maybe even before, that is that the government often has done the opposite of what is popular with public opinion, and the constant state of war we've been in. That's another really interesting observation. Let's go next to Christina in Ferndale. Christina, welcome to the show.
Good morning. Thank you for having me. Mm-hmm. So I have a unique situation. My father was a school psychologist for almost 40 years before he retired. My family has never spoken about mental health ever. Mm. So it's very ironic. And my entire family has struggled with mental health our whole lives, and 2011, my sister committed suicide, and it completely tore my family apart.
Oh, dear.
And we still have never talked, frankly, about mental health, even with him being in, not the industry, but doing his work for the schools. After that, I became estranged from my father because he would not get help himself when he truly was the one who needed it most.
Wow. Christina, I mean, that's such a heart-wrenching story. I mean, it's awful. Tell me about now for you, and I guess the way that you've maybe found substitutes for the support of your family and in trying to deal with this.
Well, friends have 100% been my family. Our community in Ferndale is amazing. We've made great friends that we consider family. It took me 8 years of having children and just trying to do it on my own because I don't trust, unfortunately, the mental health community, and it's been really hard. And with the lack of people able to, waiting for mental health therapists, being on wait lists for 3-4 months and then not feeling the fit, it's exhausting. I finally went, it took 8 years and finally reaching my breaking point in around August, September this year to just go to my primary care and say, I need help. And I was put on Lexapro. Mm. It took so long because I even finally went to a psychiatrist and they were like, why are you here? And I'm like, I don't want to be on medication. And I think it's this, still the stigma of being on medication. Mm. I want it. I'm a strong woman. I want to do things on my own. I have always done it. I just couldn't anymore. Yeah. And
but good for you for demanding, you know, for yourself that there be some kind of relief. Christina, I'm really, really glad you called. Anna Sale, I wonder what your reaction is to Christina's story.
I just thank you so much for sharing. I think that is I think you're both modeling the hope you're about what happens when you finally say, I really need somebody to give me some kind of next step. And that happened with your primary care doctor. And you're also echoing back to us, like, how long that took, you know, and the difficulty of sometimes finding that right intervention. You know, you described going to that psychiatrist's office and it not feeling like the right fit or not finding the support that you expected in your family or with a mental health professional who was your father. And I think that is kind of just like what is so heavy and difficult about taking care of our mental health is it's like at a moment when we are maybe our reserves are not what we want them to be. It can take trying again and again and again before you find that right kind of support that helps you move to the next step.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Again, Christina, really appreciate the call and wish you all the good fortune to continue to deal with these issues, not just for you, but also for your family. Let's go next to Jim in Detroit. Jim, welcome to the show.
Hi, Stephen. I want to thank you and your guests for this topic, and thank you especially for sharing your personal story. I've had mental illness in my immediate family since I was 14. I have a sibling that started to experience psychological schizophrenia, paranoid delusions when I was a teenager. And I have another sibling that has schizoaffective disorder that won't take responsibility for it and has been violent, has attacked family members, we have worked for years to try and get him help, and it is so difficult. The important thing that I think people have realized over the past several years is that mental illness is just like any other physical illness, like cancer, heart disease. It has to be addressed. Our government needs to do more. There was a lot that was cut, I believe, under the Engler administration in terms of support.
Yes.
But it's the responsibility of all of us, especially those of us that have mental illness. And I've dealt with major depressive disorder myself. So it's the responsibility of all of us that deal with it, to take ownership of it and get the help we need, and for those around us that love us, our support network, to recognize that as well. And it takes strength to get help.
It takes
strength to battle mental illness. So I just wanted to call in and thank you and your guest for addressing this topic. Yeah.
No, Jim, I really do appreciate that. And you said a number of things that I think are really, really important about strength and about the responsibility, I think, that all of us have or can take to lift these things up and put them out front so that people feel more comfortable about talking about them and dealing with them, but also can more easily find help. One of the things that you and I have talked about before is the impact of civic organizations like churches and block clubs, the other places that we belong, on that ability to lift people up and to edify people, to be able to say, hey, I'm having a problem and I need some help. We are seeing the erosion of a lot of those institutions. And Jim brought up also the erosion of the mental health system here in Michigan, which is a tragic story, more than 30 years old. We just dismantled it here, really, and left lots of people to fend for themselves. But these other institutions also are struggling. And I wonder how much connection there is between that and the increase we see in the difficulties that folks are having.
I mean, I think it's all part of the water we're swimming in. And I think that's something that the Surgeon General talked about in his report about loneliness as a public health emergency in the report that he just put out yesterday. And that's very much connected to our ability to thrive with our mental health and how loneliness also affects our physical health. And he wrote a lot about social connections and needing to tend to those social connections, not just because they would be a nice thing to have, but because it keeps us healthy. And as those erode, we become less healthy. I do want to mention a few things that are new, mm-hmm. Because so often, you know, the mental health system in our country is a mess, and it has been for decades. Somebody mentioned mass shootings and gun violence. A major investment in our mental health system was made in the bipartisan gun legislation that passed last year. It's not enough, but it is something, focused on youth and also focused on community-based behavioral health centers. And the other thing that's new that just started last summer, you might have heard of 988. It's this new phone number you can call. It's what you hear instead of the 800 number for the suicide prevention hotline. And what that is this trying to give people one easy-to-remember number to call when you have an emergency and you need a crisis intervention, but also a way to connect with someone who knows about the local mental health resources where you live. 988 is a way. It was an attempt to give people a place to call as an alternative to 911. When you call 988, you are reaching people who are trained in how to be the intervention in a mental health emergency. So you could talk for 45 minutes, 2 hours, if you feel like you were in crisis. And that alone might be, for the moment, the care you need. But then they can also connect you to what's available in your community. In a lot of communities, there are not enough resources, but that is one new step that just started last year.
Yeah. Again, Jim, really appreciate the call. And the very frank discussion about these issues. Let's go next to David in Ann Arbor. David, what's on your mind?
Good morning.
Hi.
I'd like to point out that struggles with mental illness can be both a cause and effect of a specific mental illness, and that is substance abuse disorder. And we have an opioid epidemic in this country. Mm-hmm. And, you know, a lot of people, not everybody who has struggles with mental illness will do this, but some people, for example, with anxiety or depression may self-medicate. And that means using perhaps prescription drugs at first and then moving on to, you know, street drugs. And that's a cause, part of our problem here. And an effect is that affects the users themselves. Obviously, they have a disorder, but also friends and family. Okay, there are cases where, you know, we lose over 120,000 people in this country every year to opioid or drug overdoses. That's something like 40 times more than we lost on 9/11 on an annual basis. We have a severe lack of treatment facilities for people who want to get treatment. So insurance might cover a week, 2 weeks in a treatment facility, when in fact, to be effective, it will take months, if not a year or more. So this is just another layer of our mental health crisis. And I want to point out that I believe we have a tsunami occurring silently in our society. And that is because right now, all these people that are dying, a lot of them have family members, a lot of them have children who are really traumatized by this and end up being raised by other people. Mm-hmm. And, you know, these people are going to have their own issues when they get older. They've got their genetic predisposition to using drugs is there. They've experienced trauma. They may be growing up in less than optimum conditions because they've been placed with someone else. And I just think as a society, we really need to look at that and address it. It's getting increasingly worse every day if you read the headlines.
Yeah.
Any comments you have on that would be welcome.
Yeah, David, really appreciate the call. Anna, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I think that is another, when you look at the statistics of overdose deaths and how they continue to go up, that is another indication of the failures of our mental health system. And also the profound need to figure out new ways to have interventions that layer on all those myriad ways that they affect not just someone who struggles with substance abuse, but the people who love them. And that gets to the social safety net, that gets to secure housing, that gets to enough money to cover basic needs. And also that question of, you know, I don't have an answer for this, but that profound question of who gets to decide when somebody needs to be forced into treatment.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a legal question and one that families wrestle with. It's not an easy answer, but absolutely, when you look at the substance use disorder prevalence in our country, this is all part of the same thing.
Yeah. Okay, we need to take another quick break. And when we come back, we'll continue this conversation with Anna Sale of the Death, Sex, and Money podcast from WNYC. Also continue to hear from you, our listeners, on the phones and on social. Dan in Southfield, Ken in Troy, Melissa in Metro Detroit, Robert in Troy. You'll be up next if you want to join them. 313-577-1019 is the number here. That's 313-577-1019. And again, you can go to Twitter and hashtag Detroit Today, and we can include you that way. We'll be right back with more Detroit Today.
WDET is your place for open dialogue.
The music you love.
Real news and in-depth analysis.
And cultural experiences.
The sound of Detroit.
101.9 WDET is your public radio station.
We've got Anna Sale with us today. She's the host of Death, Sex, and Money, an award-winning podcast on WNYC in New York. That podcast is going to host 3 national call-in shows this month, May, which is Mental Health Awareness Month, where folks can call in and talk about mental health, talk about their struggles with mental health, talk about the opportunity to get help. with mental health. That is going to happen on the first three Thursdays of May from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. We are also talking with you, our listeners, about mental health today. We want to hear from you about whether you're struggling with mental health, whether some of the things that have happened in the last few years, the pandemic, for instance, is an aggravator in your mental health, is making things harder to manage and to deal with. Also, give us a sense of what you do to try to make that better. Where do you find relief? And are there barriers that you find to the kind of things that you need? 313-577-1019 is the number on the phones. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter and hashtag Detroit Today, and we can work you into the conversation. Anna, before we get back to our listeners, I do want to talk just a little about what you are seeing. When you talk with people about really hard things, the people who seem most balanced and who recognize the problems they have, what do they have in common? What are they doing? What are they thinking of that keeps them, I guess, in touch with who they are and those around them and gives them some of this relief?
You know, it sounds simple, but I would say, you know, over the years interviewing people about really tough, isolating, difficult moments in life, the thing that I hear over and over again as a moment where something shifted is when they found someone to talk to who they felt could understand. Mm-hmm. You know, whether that's somebody, you know, who's struggling with their gender identity, and then they find someone who they feel like gets it, or whether it's somebody, you know, who's lost someone in a terrible accident and is struggling with grief, and they find somebody to talk to where they get to express all of the different ways that grief can manifest in our life. You know, I think that there's not one thing, but that experience of feeling at least like you are not alone in the profound depths of what you're feeling, mm-hmm. that somebody else, it's familiar to them too. That takes part of the edge off, you know, and then they have somebody to talk to about, and now what, you know? In my own life, I have been so helped by kind of like the willingness for friends to say, oh yeah, I know what that was like. You know, and let me tell you about my therapist. I mean, I have found mental health support through a network of friends way more than I have by going to Psychology Today and looking up a therapist and trying to find the right fit. You know, I really think that once there's this sort of openness around, oh, how have you dealt with when that's come up for you, or what was it like for you after you went through pregnancy? Like, just that sense of like feeling like something that you're struggling with is a little more normalized, that helps you move to the next step.
Yeah. And that gets back to this idea of community, how important community is. And I mean that in a very broad sense, you know, the different communities that we belong to. Each of them, I think, has some opportunity to provide us with that kind of support. And as we see people withdraw more from community and find it more difficult to find community with everyone else, I guess I worry again about how people make it, how people find these things, these commonalities, these connections that you're talking about, Anna.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, you're making me think about a conversation I just had with this woman, Danielle Munoz, who works in student affairs at Cal State Long Beach. And she works at something called the Center for Basic Needs. And it's this place on campus where if you're feeling like you need help figuring out how to get food stamps, or if you're housing insecure, it's this one place on campus where you can come. And what was really interesting to talk to her about was like, how great that is, that there's one place when you are in not just like mental health crisis, but life crisis, there's one door to walk through. Mm-hmm. And then there are people who can help you navigate the system of support that's available to you. I think once you're not on a college campus, it can be really hard to find those people who can help you navigate the available supports that there are out there. And that is a way, you know, I think that for a lot of us, there is help available, but it can be so difficult to figure out where it is and how it gets paid for.
Yeah. Yeah. Again, 313-577-1019 is the number here on the phones. Let's go to Ken in Troy. Ken, welcome to the show.
Thank you. And Anna and Stephen, I appreciate your time. And I thought the comments from Dave and Bernadette and Christina were so salient. And thanks to Christina for all she's done for the Ferndale. My comments are that, I mean, I have a few of them. Number one, I see two central problems. And one of them is that there's some victim blaming going on here. Hmm. Are we challenged with our mental health? Are we struggling with our mental health, as I've heard said today, or is our mental health, in fact, struggling with what's happening in our society right now? And I look at you know, the run up to World War II, for example, and I wonder, you know, how did those people deal with what they were seeing at the time—the rise of fascism and economic pressures, which they were suffering from as well, which we are right now too. And I wonder, you know, my two questions are. Can our culture possibly have the resources to deal with problems of that scale? You know, mental health issues that are occurring, you know, in what probably amounts to the majority of the populace. And then secondly, you know, when will we start looking at solving the problems of people with assault weapons shooting up school children,
right,
and a complete mishandling of the pandemic and the rise of fascism in our own country? What role does that play in actually solving the problem that's causing the problem?
Yeah. Ken, I really love the way you put that, and that's kind of looking at this in a really layered way. Anna, what's the answer to Ken's questions?
Yeah, I mean, what I hear you saying, Ken, is, you know, maybe a lot of the ways that we're feeling, which might look like and might feel like we're struggling with mental health, maybe that's a very rational response to what is happening in the world around us. And it made me think about the mental health crisis among teenagers right now. I mean, there was a report that came out in February that 3 in 5 teen girls in the U.S. in 2021 reported feeling persistently sad or hopeless. Mm-hmm. I mean, these are young people. Mm-hmm. And you know, what is that about? What are they responding to about the world that we have raised them in? Where more than half feel persistently sad or hopeless. How have we failed them? And what is the proper response to that? And I think it's not simple. But it is, there's a new book called The Emotional Lives of Teenagers by a woman named Lisa D'Amore that we're featuring her on the Colin special. And in this book, she talks about, you know, that there's this twofold thing happening. There is at once a mental health crisis among adolescents that is an emergency. Mm-hmm. And also emotional distress is not something that adults in their lives need to protect teenagers from. Instead, it's about how do we help our teenagers deal with emotional distress in healthy ways? And then how do we notice when they are not capable of doing that and when we need to bring in more interventions? So it's kind of like a both and. It could be a rational response to something that is happening, and you need professional help sometimes, and you also need to not try to protect teenagers from feelings of deep sadness or anger, for example, like that, that is part of the developing teenage brain, is strong emotions. So I thought that was interesting, because I think for parents, if you know these statistics, you might look at your teenager having really intense feelings and thinking, oh, how do I stop this? Mm. And it's not about stopping the feelings. It's about talking about the feelings, and then that hard puzzle of when is this tipping over into something where we need additional mental health support and intervention and you know, signs of underlying mental illness that could use more treatment.
Ken, really appreciate the call. Again, let's go next to Mary Agnes in Rochester. Welcome to the show.
Hi.
Hi.
I just wanted to make a couple quick comments. Family history, bipolar. Okay. So when we were involved with this family member, multiple suicide attempts, young person, very, you know, successful in many ways. Mm. And his life, he kind of crashed and burned. We found so much help with NAMI, which is, and I can't get the acronym right, your host or your guest will probably know, mental health in our area that had meetings, and I went with family member, and we sat around the table with trained facilitators, and it was like, oh my gosh, and they give you resources for whatever, you know, if it's finance or, you know, somebody doesn't have a home. And the other thing is, for me, I went to church. Hmm. And that was a huge support. I wasn't praying for, like, a magic cure, whatever. Just strength.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. So, Mary Agnes, that's such a wonderful addition to the program here. I'm really glad you called. And I should say, I didn't know about NAMI until you just mentioned it, but our producers have looked that up for me. And it's the National Alliance on Mental Illness. It is the nation's largest grassroots mental health organization dedicated to building better lives. Anna, right there, we've got, a professional organization that is dedicated to helping people with mental health. But then, as she said, she goes to church. Community. She is leaning into to both of those spaces. And that is really the key for a lot of folks.
Yeah. I mean, the thing that's really special about NAMI is how much it's made up of people who have loved people who've experienced profound mental illness. And so you will find other family members. You will find people who know what you've gone through, and they have local chapters, so you can find somebody who lives near you. But I also think the thing that about church, it's not just community and it's not just a place to pray. You can also ask for pastoral counseling. Maybe you're not sure if you can find a counselor who your insurance is going to cover and figure out how to do therapy, but like, there's somebody to talk to at church. And it's just, again, one other tool in the toolbox, that when you, if you just can create that openness, and take that step in a relationship to say, can I talk to you about something that I'm struggling with? That can be really meaningful.
Yeah. I want to take one more call before we have to end the show. Amelia in Dearborn Heights. I've only got about a minute left, but go ahead. Are you there, Amelia? Nope. I don't think we have Amelia.
Sorry. Muted.
Oh, go ahead.
I was just going to say that a lot of the callers have already said some version of what I was going to say, but as someone who has been on antidepressants and not found them very helpful, and also as someone who is a therapist, I think it's really important, the conversations that you guys have had today and that callers have brought up, of looking upstream, because both for the mental health problems that a lot of us have and also for the provider shortage in mental health. I think a lot of the problem is upstream in the social problems that we just refuse to solve as a culture.
Yeah. Amelia, I really appreciate you bringing up that point, that the shortage of mental health providers is another real aggravator in this issue, Anna. It makes it more difficult for people to find help.
Yeah, I mean, and there's nothing more frustrating than finally being ready to make that call to try to get some help, and then ending up at a dead end or a really long wait list, or finding out that it's going to be an out-of-pocket expense that you just can't afford. I mean, that is a very real issue. Access to mental health help when you are ready. So again, it's about looking at all the possible. It's looking at the closest relationships you have. It's talking to your doctor. It's looking at the community supports available to you. And again, it's both and. It's not just one fix.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, the national call-ins for death, sex, and money will be on May 4th, May 11th, and May 18th from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. Anna Sale, it was really great to have you here for this conversation, and congratulations on coming up with this idea for Mental Health Awareness Month.
Thank you so much for having me, Stephen.
Yeah. That's going to do it for us today. Come back tomorrow when we'll have more really great programming for you here on Detroit Today. This is 101.9 WDET-FM, Detroit's NPR station, your connection to news, music, and conversation. We'll talk again tomorrow.